Carrie Gibson grew up in Dalton, Georgia, and what she saw there during high school influenced her career as a historian. Her most recent book, which came out earlier this year, is titled El Norte, The Epic and Forgotten History of Hispanic North America. She spoke to me from London. Carrie, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So tell me how you came to write this book.
Well, it was a bit of a long journey, and it starts just down the road from Chattanooga, actually, in Dalton, Georgia, where I went to high school. My high school and the town of Dalton were transformed in the 90s when I was in school there during the kind of NAFTA years, as a lot of people immigrated from Mexico to work in the town's carpet industry. Now, that all happened while I was in high school. And then I went off to university. Then I moved to London. And then I worked as a journalist. And then I kind of got back into history. And I worked on the Hispanic Caribbean for my thesis. So I kind of forgotten about high school and Dalton and everything. And then as I started looking at this second project and thinking about a book where I wanted to revisit kind of the Hispanic roots of the United States, I realized, of course, that I could start the story where my own interest in this started, where my own kind of exposure to the Hispanic past began, and that was at Dalton High School.
And tell me more about that experience. You saw the demographics change during your time there.
So when I started school, which was in, I guess, 1990, it was pretty much still English-speaking majority school. And then by the time I graduated in 94, it had become pretty bilingual. Like, I remember the morning announcements would be in English and Spanish. And I studied, I mean, the school already offered 4 years of Spanish language instruction, but by the time I graduated, we had native speakers to practice with, and obviously they were in school learning English. So it was very clear the difference between my freshman year and my senior year. And that was something I took with me. But also, I think Dalton was kind of ahead of the curve in the sense of, you know, the demographic patterns in places like Georgia and Tennessee have changed quite a lot in the last decade. But this is 25 years ago. So I think what happened in Dalton was kind of a sense of the shifts that were going to happen, you know, in the Atlanta area, the Nashville area, the Chattanooga area. But Dalton was kind of there first.
And that was the key that led you to focusing on a slice of history that had been forgotten.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of use forgotten as a kind of contentious word, because obviously if you talk to people in places like New Mexico or Texas, a lot of them will say, well, we haven't forgotten our past. But one of the problems, I think, with U.S. history is that the U.S. is such an enormous country, very hard to learn, or at least not hard to learn, it's just a lot of regional stories have not been integrated into the more national narrative. So it's quite funny, for instance, I have friends from California, and they couldn't believe that we didn't have to build Spanish missions out of sugar cubes, because part of the California story is about Junipero Serra came and how they built missions and all this sort of thing. And of course, obviously, in Georgia, growing up, we didn't know anything about that history. So what I was trying to do is kind of look at the entire United States and kind of the larger picture as well of the Caribbean and North America, and think about that broader canvas of the Spanish past. And, you know, and then as I was putting it together, I realized it stretches from Florida to California and north to Canada and all the way to New York. And, you know, so it's also part of the national story. But it was definitely a challenge kind of bringing those pieces together.
So what are some things that you focus on in your book that people might not know about?
I think there's a lot of things that either people didn't know, or it's very vague in the back of their mind. So, you know, we kind of overlooked the fact that the entire Louisiana territory, for instance, was held by Spain after the Seven Years' War, and basically until 1802, when they gave it back to Napoleon, who then quickly turned around and sold it to the U.S. So there are things like that that are part of this landscape that are kind of faded. Now, they might be in a textbook. It might be a line here, a quick paragraph there, but they're not kind of part of things that we think about in the same way that, say, we think about the Mayflower. You know, they're not shorthand necessarily, the broader national experience, but they're definitely part of that. So I, in researching this book, went out to California, and it was my first time there, and I drove the entire mission trail. And just as a physical thing, all the churches that are along it are quite something. It, you know, it's this remnant of this built Spanish past. And it's also part of the bigger story of European colonization, the destruction of Native American groups. But those churches are there, you know, and they kind of form a spine up the coast of California. And you might have seen Hitchcock's Vertigo, and there's a scene involving the Mission Church. But like to see the actual churches one after another and drive that is kind of hammered home to me. There's a physical element to this as well. Like this history is very present and very in the landscape. You know, that's outside of obviously all the people who have a history that kind of crosses the border or goes into places in the Caribbean like Puerto Rico or Cuba and moves between that and the United States.
What does the story of that broader canvas have to say to us today, given the demographic changes that have happened, are happening, and are poised to continue in this country, in this area, with issues on the front burner again and again and again, such as immigration?
One of the arguments I make in the book is that the United States should recast its history in many ways and think about the fact of what it shares with the rest of the continent rather than what's different. Because to begin with, we did have at least a century of Spanish incursion around here before sort of proper permanent English settlements were made. So it's part of that larger story that involved Columbus, it involved the Caribbean, Mexico, and a lot of the elements are the same. The destruction of indigenous groups, the rise of African slavery, independence movements. You know, the United States was a republic, but then so was Haiti, so was Argentina, so was Colombia. We share quite a hemispheric history. What I really kind of want to drive home in the book is that shared story. And if we think about it in the sense of a shared story, then perhaps the way that we think about our neighbors will be very different. And we'll see the people that are next to us as being people who share in what we do rather than people who are different somehow to us. And also, you know, you have to bear in mind some of the practicalities. I mean, the United States now is the second largest Spanish-speaking country after Mexico and ahead of Spain. I think it's ahead of Spain and then Colombia or Colombia and Spain. So the demographics have shifted. They are shifting. And to me, it seems actually quite fitting, quite natural that we have a Spanish-speaking population. Most of the rest of the hemisphere is either Spanish-speaking or Portuguese-speaking. So it makes sense that there are people in the U.S. who speak Spanish and that there's bilingualism. So that's kind of the core of the argument of the book.
And then what's next for you?
I'm not quite sure. I'm playing around some ideas that might take me back to 20th century, kind of interwar Mexico, but we'll see where that goes. But I think I'm definitely staying in Latin America for sure for the next book. Although one of these days I'm going to get around to writing something about the South.
Sounds good. We'll be following. Carrie Gibson, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.